coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
So you two, dig up dinosaurs?
Oh.
Try to.
Yo. Welcome to a very special edition of Hey Kids Comics, in which dinosaurs and prehistory rule the Earth. Harkening back to the Andediluvian, and beforehand, in fact, Cole and Andy, along with special guest, the Rancor Pit's own Eddie Medina, travel back to a distant time before time itself had even begun being recorded by man, who, of course, had not been invented yet.
Do you know about chaos theory?
I hate that, man. The voice you're now hearing, you're just hearing, is that of my brother. Spare no expense.
Life finds a way, Cole. Life finds a way.
I would do my Laura Dern, but I'm not that bad of an actor.
I do a Laura Dern, too.
Oh, ouch.
That hurts. That's rough. Yeah. That's rough. Sam Neill just took off his hat and looked at you. How dare you?
Yeah, when Sam Neill takes off his hat, you know shit's about to go down.
Shit's going down. Yes.
I want to point out, mister, that Laura Dern is in the upcoming episode 8. So life does find a way.
Life always finds a way. So, this is awesome.
When Eddie goes to see episode 8, a quick Rancor Pit aside, when she comes on the screen, people immediately around him are going to be so upset because he's going to be going, she shouldn't be here.
I'm going to be booing and hissing when she comes on the screen.
Booing and hissing. The problem is they took a chromosome out of Laura Dern's acting career about 7 years ago. But they spliced it in with Nick Cage's acting career chromosome. Oh, okay. So it adapted and grew into a Star Wars role. That's the way it happens.
That's where Shia LaBeouf came from.
So this is all
she took the DNA from her performance in Blue Velvet.
God, Lord. They locked that in a vault. That's the vault that flooded up in Antarctica, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they considered it the best acting since her cameo on The Waltons.
Listen, Laura Dern is the actress that time forgot.
Speaking of time forgot, this is Hey Kids Comics, issue 230. We came up with an idea for a story arc about a month and a half ago and realized we had to move it up the chain of events to now.
There are a couple of arcs that got bumped well into 2019
because of this. So I hope you jerks appreciate it. It's a free podcast, really, and we just hope you listen. But the idea was
what? It's free.
It's free.
I've been paying for it this whole time.
Well, Eddie, you've been sending me checks directly.
We don't mention free.
Oh, that's right. It is $5 an episode. No, we wanted to do – we sat down and we were talking about stuff we hadn't done, and it dawned on us. We have not done an entire story arc on eras and time periods. Like, what is wrong with us?
That
we hadn't done one on all these different kind of epochs and eras in history, and there's so many comic books that are laced and woven through those time periods that it was stupid of us not to do it. So we decided we were going to do a story arc on time.
Exactly. I think it really the genesis of this, oddly enough, wasn't Genesis, but rather either biblically or was, Phil Collinsley.
It was Peter Gabriel, was, man. That was the genesis of Genesis.
Yeah, that's so true. But I think this began when we had lengthy discussions about Camelot 3000.
Yeah, it did.
And then we were talking about getting medieval.
Yes.
And the next thing we knew, we had 5-issue story arc. And we're going to get Primeval.
We are. And I got a lot to say. I got a lot of questions. I got more questions than answers about this era, this epoch, this time period that we're covering today. Because the really interesting thing, first of all, you know, we've got Eddie here. Eddie, thank you for joining us tonight on short notice. We appreciate it.
Oh, anytime.
So Eddie tells us, you know, we're coming up on this and we're looking for a guest. And of course, Eddie's the first person that the first person that's the second person we always think of because that's he's amazing and also available.
Y'all always ask me because you feel guilty because I'm paying $5 a podcast all these years.
That's right. That's probably owe me. So, but we're talking about this.
Out of the bag now.
We're like, we're going to do and this is the way Eddie operates. And I never understand this with Eddie. I love Eddie. Eddie's one of my top five favorite people on the face of this planet. That's no fooling. But one thing Eddie does is we'll come to him like 15 minutes before we're going to record a show. And we're like, hey, do you want to jump on and record with us tonight? And he's like, sure. So we get on there. He's like, what are we recording tonight about? And we're like, you know, dinosaurs and prehistory comics. He's like, I know all about that. How do you do that? It's like we're going to record tonight about weird.
It's like it instantly comes into his head. No matter the topic, there's like this. He's like Johnny Mnemonic of comics or something.
He's limitless. He's got the Lucy drug of comic books.
Oh, there we go.
I may have oversold myself because it's not so much what I'm bringing to the table is knowledge of prehistoric comics, but comics that have to do with dinosaurs.
That's all that matters, dude. That's all that matters. Eddie uses 90% of his brain.
Most of these don't for dinosaur take comics. Place in the prehistoric era, but they have dinosaurs. Yeah, I think my exact response when you told me prehistoric comics was, oh, hell, let me break out the wine.
That's right. That's exactly what he said. So I guess my first question for the both of you, now Cole's a ringer when it comes to prehistory and dinosaurs and that type of thing. So, you know, this is as much a ringer for Cole as medieval comics are for me. But why are we so enamored with prehistory and dinosaurs in all of our media, but especially in comics? Like, why is that a thing that we always drift to? Always.
I think part of it is the kind of, you have to imagine, put yourself in a very Victorian frame of mind where quite literally it was one of those periods where everything that could be invented had been invented as far as you knew.
Right.
Everything that could be known was known as far as we knew, except whatever was lost at the Library of Alexandria. Real shame that.
Eddie has that in his brain.
Yeah. I really think that was an inside job. But anyway.
Is Eddie Vandal Savage?
Oh, that explains everything.
Damn it. We figured it out, Eddie.
Safe. We figured out you were safe disguised as.
And here I would have thought I was Solomon Grundy all these years.
Oh.
I'm going to give you Solomon Grundy.
I was born on a Monday, after all.
Oh, well, there you go.
Isn't that where? Never mind. I'm not going to. Urban Dictionary, Solomon Grundy.
Yeah,
Eddie,
you don't want to see that. Trust me. It's.
I'm going to give you a Solomon Grundy.
Is that really an Urban Dictionary term?
Sure.
Yes, it is. And if it wasn't, it is now. Remember, if you're adding that to Urban Dictionary, mention the yeasty menace of the Solomon Grundy.
Also, I just came up with another story show idea, which was Comic Book Urban Dictionary, where we just take comic book names and terms and make them Urban Dictionary. It's going to be an R-rated show, for sure.
Oh, good night. It is an Urban Dictionary.
What's it say?
I can't even give the definition.
Probably for the best.
Okay, so dinosaurs. Why, Cole? Why dinosaurs? Let Eddie ruminate on.
One thing is that the Solomon Grundy has a duration of about a week.
It does, and you need a special ointment.
That's right.
Gosh, this is a thing.
All right, read it.
We have so corrupted Eddie. We have ruined this man.
Read it, Eddie.
So, yeah, the thing about it is, this is a difficult one because I am silly for dinosaurs. You know, before comics, before Star Wars, for me, both literally and figuratively, there were dinosaurs.
Right.
And I think that the appeal comes from the concept. You have to imagine that at the birth of paleontology, we often talk about the kind of gentleman scholars who would just sort of like, you know, they were rich men of leisure who would just go out and spend all their money going and in pursuit of a kind of pseudo-science that they knew nothing about. You know, you didn't have to have any credentials. All you had to have was a bankroll. And you go back far enough, and, you know, the early days of paleontology, it was just a gold rush, because suddenly we recognized there's a lot of crap that used to walk, crawl, slither, and swim upon the face of the Earth that's long gone. Not just the stuff we wiped out while taking over some very important bits of real estate. Ho, ho. You know, not like the moa or the quagga or the elephant bird or the dodo.
All of those things also are on Urban Dictionary, just so you know.
Yes, indeed. Trust me, you don't want to do a quagga.
Eddie and I shared a moa while we were at Alcon the last time. Yeah, for sure. I bowled robbed that class ring right out of him.
That's right. I saw the Scardust to prove it.
Amateurs. Let's just say the thylacine is not for the faint of heart. But,
God, nerd. Sorry, I know this is a comic book podcast, but nerd!
Damn you, you natural history nerds! Nerds! Natural history nerds!
Oh, my gosh.
So Cole, we are going to – you have Eddie and I on a show. You know we're going to derail you, so just power through. Just power through.
You know, you had like that rivalry that was going on in the U.S., which interesting fun fact about paleontology in the U.S. is
listen to what you did. You just said interesting fun fact about paleontology.
What are you going to suddenly turn into Pigeon from Mike Tyson Adventures? I think the only fact here is that you think that was fun.
I just think it's funny that if we not to go too far off the beaten path of what we're talking about, and maybe it isn't actually, because I think I can tie this back. But that reptilian part of our brain that sees the nerd in Cole come out for dinosaurs, and Eddie and I immediately just jump on it and start beating it with sticks. We're just like, nerd. We're on a comic book podcast, and we see blood in the water, and we just jump on it and start beating on it with sticks.
Cole's like a wounded okapi, and we're the two raptors just pouncing on him.
That's right. Cole, that is bizarre that, you know, I am getting browbeaten for being a natural history nerd, and Eddie brings up one of the most fascinating animals in the world, the okapi, which was not recognized by zoology until the 20th century.
Yes, it was not recognized by zoology until the 20th
century. This thing had been hiding out all this time.
Believe you, it's been hiding. It's the coelacanth of my heart.
What?
But you know what? It's because of the wine, I meant to say okapi.
You mean like a compsognathus, not an okapi, because you were so mixing your epics.
I know.
Was an epic fail.
It's the cheap Walmart wine speaking here.
Oh, well, that'll happen.
So go on. I promise we'll respect your love.
No, quite all right. No, I got to make another bad pun, so there's that. But you know, you have, and quickly, the fun fact is that the U.S. is ideally suited for the finding of tonnages of dinosaurs, because a lot of the soil in Europe just didn't lend itself well to preservation. But anyway, just imagine that, you know, once these animals were being discovered ad nauseum and being reconstructed, and everybody was just, you know, museums where they belonged were just hell-bent to get their hands on as many specimens as possible. And, you know, this very Victorian sense of, wow, the Earth is more bizarre than we ever imagined, then I think therein lies the enduring appeal, because as culturally, the First World has never shaken that fascination with quite literally the title of this issue, The Time Before Time.
Right. No, I agree with that for sure. And also, I think, you know, and I say this with a grain of salt, but I think that in a lot of cases, throw a dinosaur at it became either A, lazy story writing, or B, lazy story writing that was ironically really good story writing, depending on what it was, because it was easy to just throw a dinosaur at it. Like, if you painted yourself into a corner, you throw a dinosaur at it. Like, because they're larger than life, and they capture the imagination, and like you were saying, we could now see how much larger than life our world was, and it plays directly into the idea of comics so well that I think it
absolutely.
Made it easy.
And the thing about it is, it was good enough for Axe Cop. It's good enough for me.
Right, right. If it's good enough for I don't know what we're gonna do. Well, let's make a patch, and it's always a valley, or
yes,
or a crater,
or an island, or some far off island in the Pacific or something.
Right, no, you're right. Yeah, so what are we gonna do? We gotta have the X-Men have something interesting here. Why don't we have a crater that's that time forgot? Why don't we do that? All right, sounds good.
Why don't we take a leaf from Edgar Rice Burroughs and Jules Verne and even Sir Arthur Conan Doyle with the Lost World of Roy Rama.
But even before all that, we had some really, really interesting stuff back in the days of, like you said, back in the days of when comics were coming into their gentleman scientist phase. You had your Gold Keys and your Dells. You had stuff back then that was really, really interesting when it came to like prehistoric comics, where you had like Tor and Anthro, and my personal favorite that I've learned a lot about doing research for this, which is I thought that I had stumbled upon something new and exciting because it had a giant chromium cover and a space I would call it a space Indian back then, but now I can call it a space Native American or a space American Indian on it, and that was Turok the Dinosaur Hunter.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah. In fact, most people weren't really all that aware, I guess, unless you read heavily about it, that Turok the Dinosaur Hunter and Magnus Robot Fighter were, when Valiant launched, they did it by bringing back some old stuff that a lot of people had forgotten. I'm sure for fans of these titles back in the day, it was a huge thrill to say, like, someone remembered. You know, I thought I was the only person who remembered this character. And I was sort of vaguely aware that these things did exist prior.
Yeah, like Solar Man of the Atom, that they all were old Gold Key characters that they brought back. But I don't want to jump too far ahead when we're talking about this, but the really interesting thing for me about Turok is the way that they – and how many times it's changed hands and the way that they did it, because it started – I believe it started with Dell. It started back with Dell. It has moved hands around after Dell, like and then it went to Valiant in the 90s. Well, after
it went to Whitman for a while.
You're right. You're right. Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Yeah, check out the big knowledge on Eddie.
I'm telling you, he has all this. He's doing this on purpose. He has all the secret information that he's just not sharing. I think that's what's going on. But what was really cool about it when I was researching it, right, is, and we'll get into the dinosaur aspects of it, because that was some cool ass shit, right? But Turok, there was Turok, right? Then there was Tal Set, Carl Fireseed, Joshua Fireseed, Danielle Fireseed, and Joseph Fireseed, and then Joseph Turok. All of which I don't, and that's my question, is because I don't know the answer to this. Is
of the late Pleistocene Turoks?
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. Is this an honorary handed down from generation, like a Black Panther situation, where you had all the different kings that were Black Panthers? Did all these people then become the Turok for that time period? Like an honorific. Like that's what I'm seeing, right? Like this is the chronological order that you had Turok, who was the original, who got trapped in the Lost Valley, right?
Yeah.
Then you had Tal Set, who was a warrior that became Turok in the 1800s. Then you had Carl Fireseed, who was Turok from like the 80s to the 90s. Then you had Joshua, who was from the 90s up. Then you had the Danielle and Joseph Fireseed, but then you had Joseph. Then it doubles back to Joseph Turok, who was a space marine in the later ones. So, like, I think that's really cool. But this visits a lot of the tropes that I was talking about with the Lost Valley, hidden, you know, the hidden veil. I think that, Eddie, what do you think about that? Because you chimed in, you perked up when I started talking about, like, the Lost Valley, Hidden Crater, Underground.
I know very little about the vintage Turok. My Turok is the Turok of the Valiant era.
Okay.
Because I ate that stuff up like crazy, but I can't preach too much on it because it's very limited to just the Valiant. I didn't even know that there were different Turoks until you started mentioning it.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I was just assuming it was the same, but I didn't realize the rich history there because I was aware of Turok, Son of Stone.
Yes.
Yes.
Which seemed to be like this refugee from a Western. Like he'd like walked off the set of The Searchers and wound up in the Land of the Lost or something.
You're expecting him to be on the side of a littered highway and a little single tear just runs down, you know, his cheek.
Oh, my God. Not only is it funny, but it's timely as well. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Now, the thing about it is I'm only familiar with Turok, Son of Stone, just from, vague awareness of a lot of the old Dale Goldkey, Whitman, etc., and of course the revival of the character. I know that in the Valiant era, you know, you have the sort of Velociraptor of Borg.
Yes.
And he's hunting as Turok, dinosaur hunter.
Right. Yeah, right.
But
yes.
Back when he was Son of Stone, was that taking place in prehistory? Was it some sort of strange world we never knew?
No, again, I don't know much about the old Whitman Gold Key era, and for a long time forgot that he was with Dell. But it from what I remember, just kind of flipping through copies at friends' house and at the library, and I'm talking decades back, it seemed like it was more of like a something like you would see like on Sid and Marty Krofft, where he was thrown into this other world type thing, where the prehistoric world kind of operated naturally, and he was just a man out of time and place.
But I think but at least
he was going back in time, and that's important because this is the first chapter of period pieces. So a lot of the things I would love to talk about, and we'll probably have to do like a Dino DNA episode sometime, because there's so many things that take place in a contemporary or future setting for their time. But we're talking about historical period. So I think Turok in his original incarnation works, because that's sort of him being thrust back in this kind of apocryphal mixed bag prehistory that is so popular in science fiction. Where, you know, the I'm sure paleontologists are like, you know, in the Lost World, where Dr. Grant's like, no, it's a herbivore. Like, no, shut up. Let the kid play, you jerk. You know, they'd be like, oh, actually, these two dinosaurs were separated by millions of years. Who cares? It's fun. I had, like, dinosaurs from seven different distinctive periods in prehistory, and they all mingled in my Marx playsets as a child in vibrant yellows and putty gray. And that stupid Hadrosaurus looking like it was just like, oh, yes, this is my coming out party. Sorry.
God!
The one person who gets the joke, because they can visualize instantly that stupid Hadrosaurus that looks like some sort of foppish dandy being introduced to high society.
Foppish dandy?
Yeah.
Really?
It's Sir Lord Fauntlasaur. But no, yeah, okay, so I'm with you now. Because a lot of what I've done in my research, a lot of what I found isn't necessarily you go to that time period, it's that time period comes to you. But there are a lot of, like, for instance, one of my favorites that I researched was Anthro. Anthro was a really cool – DC put it out back in 68. Anthro was a Cro-Magnon, which is what they – now, I don't know if he was a Cro-Magnon, because here's the thing, right? He was not – he was never portrayed as a Cro-Magnon. Like, Cro-Magnon have a look, right?
I think he was a Pro-Magnon.
I think he was the first meta – I think the idea was – later, when you start looking at how he kind of jumped forward in time, and how he actually fought off Vandal Savage, this is the tribe. Remember when we were talking back during the, and we will talk, oh, you better believe we're going to talk about Batman. Back when we were talking about Batman, when he got time bulleted. with your brilliant supposition as to what happens to all superheroes when they get time bulleted by Darkseid, was that Anthro was a member of the tribe that ended up finding Batman back when he was time bulleted.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Well, and what a great way to bring Anthro back, who most of us had not seen since the Crisis on Infinite Earths, when he wound up, ironically, the cave of his tribe was sort of time merged into the Grand, you know, right next to the Grand Escalier in Wayne Manor.
Really?
Which I would have loved for Perez to have given us coverage of poor Alfred having to dust that sort of late Pleistocene rock strata there.
But if you read it, and it's a product of its time period, right? So you had a lot of fight the woolly mammoth, stave off the saber-toothed tiger attack, but intermixed with all of that, you had a Day in the Life comic about a really pretty Cro-Magnon boy trying to woo. Like, it's almost like Riverdale with giant sloths, you know?
It's funny that you make that comparison, because I've never heard of Anthro, so as y'all are talking, I'm researching it, and I'm coming across all this imagery of what looks like this Anthro guy and Betty from Betty and Veronica.
Right.
And then you go and throw Riverdale out there, thinking, oh my gosh, that's what I'm looking at right now.
Well, nobody wants an ugly comic book character either, unless they're the bad guy.
Well, the thing about it is, a classic kind of trope in its own right, Anthro and I can't remember his wife's
name, Imbra?
Yeah. Huh?
Imbra.
Imbra, that's right. So she, you know, together, you know, between the two of them, they were like, I think, almost, I don't think, like you said, they ever really came out and defined them as Cro-Magnons, but I think that they were meant to be sort of like the pretty ones, you know. They were sort of the aberration that would lead to Cro-Magnon Man out of Neanderthal.
Yes, yes.
And yes. That's for Harlan Ellison, by the way. Is that right? Is it Harlan Ellison who was bitching about Neanderthal? Give it a break.
When is he not bitching about something, though?
It was definitely Harlan Ellison then, yeah. He was also bitching on the same gripe about this is having your cake and eating it, too. Which he said was quite perfectly reasonable and possible.
It's funny, you guys see the cover to Anthro number 6, because it literally has Anthro playing the role of Jughead, where he's leaning back against a mound, chowing down on some sort of leg of something, while the Betty and Veronica, paper versions of Betty and Veronica, are having a cat fight. Like, I'm waiting for the nip slip.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's right there. It's absolutely right there. Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Well, the thing about it is that a lot of people realize that DC also published Anthro's Double Drugs Double Digest and Imbra.
It's insane the comparisons you can make to Archie and Jughead, just the little bit I'm looking
at. No, it's like a Jurassic Jughead.
Jurassic Jughead. No, it really, it's funny because it's true. That's the weird thing about it is, like, you have all these stories, and if you look at the covers, they're right there. It's you know, Howard Post did it, and Howard Post, I think, did other period comics like that as well. But it is very much a weird kind of day in the life. Oh, you know, like almost a Flintstones meets, you know, Tarzan-y type situation. It's weird. I like it, but it's weird.
Oh, what's fascinating about it?
I'm going to find some of these and check them out. I'm like really interested in this now.
Well, two things that are really fascinating about it. I had forgotten about, looking at some of these covers, the Tiny Tim, the prehistoric Tiny Tim with his makeshift crutch.
Well, do you know what? It's really dark, right? Because I'm pretty sure that what happened with Anthro was that Tiny Tim was his brother. That character was his brother, and you know, he had a rock fall on him and crush his leg, and he became lame because of it. Which is like,
you know,
really
the thing
dark.
About it is, in genuine prehistory, he would have been just like thrown to the saber tooths.
Right.
I was
going to
say,
shouldn't
they just like eaten him at that point?
I mean, literally, like, you know, Cold War communism was based on our ancient ancestors.
Oh, no, no, no. So here,
throw the parasites away.
So here's the write-up, right? His name was Lart. Lart.
Lart.
Lart was was the younger brother of Anthro, the first boy on Earth. Lart was once a spry kid until a wolf crushed his leg, making him lame. Could have been worse.
It was a decent character. He was pretty well developed. Oh,
I hate to break the news to you, but he was lame right before that wolf ever got a hold of him.
Well,
if he wasn't lame, he wouldn't have been enlamened by that wolf. But also, what's fascinating is Gene Aul was a big fan of Anthro, and it actually inspired Clan of the Cave Bear.
I don't think that's
true. Oh, really?
True.
Are you, you're
I
not
don't
kidding
think
about
that's
that?
That's true. I think that's fake. I think it's fake news. Cole, is that fake news?
I read it somewhere.
Oh,
God.
I read it just now in my notes.
Right. I read it on Urban Dictionary.
Hey, let me tell you, there's nothing quite like getting a Gene Aul.
Oh, no.
Talk about petrified wood.
So what else is out there? I know we've got guys like Tor, which hang out for a while. You know, we don't want to cross the threshold into medieval, you know, barbarian land. But you had mentioned in your notes, Cole, and I definitely want to get to this. You had put in there Age of Reptiles. And I did a little looking into Age of Reptiles, which I thought was a really cool concept for a comic.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was Ricardo Delgado. I just can't fathom. I mean, I love Age of Reptiles. It is brilliant. It is beautiful. I own a print. They made a Dark Horse actually produced a series of prints of original artwork based on it by Delgado. And there's this wonderful school or a pod, I guess, of mosasaurs. And I just I held out to find that one because some of the prints are all gorgeous, but that one was the one that just spoke to me the most. But Age of Reptiles, I think, is curious because I can't imagine with the body of work, with their catalog of titles that Dark Horse had at that period in history, getting sold on the idea of publishing not one, but two miniseries without a single word of dialogue, captioning, anything.
But that's so cool.
Because yeah,
that's
which works because they didn't. The dinosaurs didn't have a written language. We've checked
multiple times. But think about how. So what we really suffer from when we talk about comic books in this time period, right? Is this
that play in Birdman? What we suffer when we talk about comics in this period?
That's yes, it is. damn it! Is that? Is that we all fall into this tropism idea of what these comics should be. Like we were saying, right? Plane crashes on island populated by dinosaurs, Howling Commandos or Sergeant Rock has to come save you. Blackhawks have to come save you. Or Blackbird crashes on Crater, discover dinosaurs and Kazar and Zabu. Or
yeah.
Fall into the center of the earth and find a land populated by mole people and weird giant dinosaurs. You know, these are the tropes that we find. What we really need, because you can't really have – what we really need is this book. If you're going to have a dinosaur book, this is the book you need to have. It's not Devil – I love Devil Dinosaur, but it's not Devil Dinosaur. It's cute, but come on. It's not –
No, I mean, the thing about it is Devil Dinosaur and a lot of other titles like that, and one that did not occur to me until just this moment, which we will talk about because it was in its own way equally brilliant, was – You are compelled to have a narrative. You need a principal character. You need, Tor is basically your prehistoric Tarzan.
Right.
I mean, just practically, they should have just called him Tarzan.
Listen, he had a monkey named Chi Chi.
I saw that.
Listen, I don't care what you say at all. I don't know. I think Eddie heard me. I think he's doing research right now. Eddie.
Yeah, sorry. I'm obsessed with the artwork in Age of Reptiles. I'm like,
oh, is that not phenomenal?
Yeah.
I mean, some of this stuff is amazing.
My God.
No, Eddie, I just wanted you to hear me when I said Tor has a pet monkey named Chi-Chi. I just wanted you to hear me say that. Now you can go back That's to whatever.
Well, I also love
I've
the
got
fact
a pet,
that...
pet monkey named Chi-Chi, too.
I bet you do. I've seen pictures. I have the internet.
Well, what's wonderful with the first image of the first appearance of Tor, with this wonderful Joe Kubert art.
Oh, it's so good.
Is this giant splash page of Chi-Chi about to get by apparently a strangely carnivorous Brontosaurus, again, making a Dr. Grant really upset about the miss, the anachronism there, is...
It looks like a Trapasaurus, like a trap spider, because it's all you see is its head coming out of, like, what would be the ground. Like, it buries itself to eat people. Is that the Sarlacc? I think that's the Sarlacc. I'm not sure. Where does the Sarlacc fall into this category?
You just gave me a great idea for the Ranker Pit.
Good.
If we don't like something Star Wars, it's Sarlacc Luster.
No.
Okay, enough of that. But I love the fact that you have this great big text that tells you 1 million years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But Age of Reptiles is I think one of the only times you get immersed in prehistory without the necessity of having a human connection. Most of the things you have to kind of land to the lost it. You have to You have to have some person there to, if for nothing else, for scale, because these animals were enormous.
Right.
But Age of Reptiles tells a cohesive tale. It's just like a little vignettes of life in very specific periods of prehistory, where all of the animals interacting not only would have interacted in that time period, but also in that geographic space. You'll often get the hard-nosed paleo nerds who will point out that certain dinosaurs in popular conflicts in cinema could not have had these epic battles because they were separated by several million years, or oftentimes tens of millions of years. But, you know, here you have, like, following a troop of velociraptors. I don't know if that's the correct term. I'm going with a term that you would ascribe to a troop of baboons, because to me that's the way they hunt. Because baboons are like the best of dogs and monkeys all shoved into one. Only meaner.
Right, and their butts are so red.
Oh, they are so red.
Super red butts on those baboons.
They make sadists jealous. Like, but anyway.
Wow.
Super red butts.
Super red butts on baboons.
Are we talking about baboons, or are we talking like spanking porn? What are we talking about here?
They're mashed like dogs and monkeys. But anyway.
That's right.
But you follow this tribe of velociraptors on the hunt, and there was a guy back in our diamond days who used to go, and I had like an opaque projector, blow up panels of comic books and sketch them out and paint them for a fee. And I actually had a canvas of my favorite shots. It's where one of them falls off the requisite cliff, because Gondwana land was replete with cliffs because the continents were starting to form. So there were just cliffs everywhere. And if you weren't careful, off you went. He lands in the water, and lo and behold, as one would expect, there's an ichthyosaurus ready to swallow him whole.
Sure, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Happened
to
me once.
I think my only real complaint is that it does take on that kind of Victorian notion of nature red in tooth and claw, in much the same way in Jurassic World we're given a taste of sweet, sweet freedom. What does every single pterodactyl species on display do? They all go charge for the food court to kill everybody.
Right.
Like, did they not feed them?
sure, yeah.
Good Lord, I thought the Planet of the Apes reboot was bad to the...
They aren't mad. You know, there's a difference between mad and hungry. Like, if your cat was that hungry, it would eat you. It's not, you know, you don't go out into the woods and just get hunted all the time. That's not the way nature works. I mean, granted. Yeah,
historically, any animal that has ever escaped from the zoo does not immediately go on a murderous rampage.
We say that right now after that person, after that woman fell into the tiger enclosure and got killed, so R.I.P. Brave Tiger Lady. But anyway,
gosh.
But that's different. She fell in. She got in his territory.
That's right. That's true. That's
true. It's like you said, the commercial for Kong Skull Island, because I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm sorry, but you know, you go pick a fight like that.
It's good. It's real good. Speaking of dinosaur type Lost World ideas, Kong Skull Island is fan effantastic.
I can't wait to see it. I can't believe I haven't seen it yet.
It's Apocalypse.
That was what I was just like anticipating so badly.
It's Apocalypse Now meets Jurassic Park is what it is, and that
good.
Oh man, it's so good. It's
the opposite of horror because that's what I want Colonel Kurtz yelling.
Well, that's what Samuel. Because there's no better. There's the only Colonel Kurtz that was better than Colonel Kurtz is Samuel L. Jackson. Let me just tell you that right now. So, okay, so let's go back to dinosaurs and comics, because, you know, Eddie said he's not well versed in the idea of prehistoric comics, but he knows his way around a dinosaur. So I just want to know what Eddie's favorite comic dinosaur is at this point.
Well, before I get into that, it's Cole, when you were talking about Age of Reptiles, it got the wheels turning in my head that I knew that there was this other comic out there, because you were talking about usually they have to throw in a human into the mix to kind of make it relatable.
Yeah.
But I started thinking there was another comic that was like Age of Reptiles where it just told the dinosaur story. So I started thinking.
I think I know where you're headed with this.
Yeah.
I was actually looking it up because I thought it was by
Steve Bissett.
Yeah, he did that thing.
He did the Tyrant series where it follows the life of a T-Rex.
Yes, from hatching.
Yeah, from hatching.
I don't remember if you see him actually being laid, the actual egg being laid, but I think you pretty much just start in the nest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like a nest to stomach of an ichthyosaur tail.
Well, yeah.
That's the cradle to grave story.
Yeah, pretty much, except the series never finished, so you never got to the grave part. But no, I mean, it goes before the egg itself. I mean, it goes inside the egg. They show him.
Oh, that's right. It does show the embryonic Tyrannosaurus.
Yeah.
So you can really get into the point where the egg tooth is starting to form. And
exactly. I was like, so.
Oh, my goodness, escape. And yeah, and then all of a sudden he goes tear-assing around, killing everything in sight. No, it actually is a very compelling tale in its own right. But I think that one was narrated.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like G.I. Joe number 21 where there was like no words.
Snake Eyes the Velociraptor?
It wasn't the silent interlude, you know, ode to Larry Hama there, Sad Hama. Immediately I thought of Tyrant when you started talking about Age of Reptiles. But yeah, you're right. Tyrant did have narration
about Age of Reptiles brought the Tyrant back into my brain. Like, why didn't I think of that before? And even talking about that brought back one of the only manga I ever paid money for.
Uh-oh.
Because I'm not that I would go around like pocketing manga and having a five-finger discount or anything. I just never had any desire to own any. But I believe it was it was DC's Paradox Press.
Okay.
Imported and translated a little manga about this little Tyrannosaurus Rex infant, I guess you'd say. The character's name Gone, G-O-N.
Yes, yeah, yes, Gone.
Which I thought was a brilliant play on words as well.
Yeah.
I remember that for sure. Yeah, absolutely. That's cool.
Getting back to my favorite dinosaur-centric comic, there's a few that just sprang immediately into mind, but I have to go straight up Xenozoic Tales.
Okay, in fact, because we're trying to stick to the period, Xenozoic Tales and some others we are going to talk about, because you can't talk about the age of the dinosaur without talking about where all the dinosaur went from there. And I do want to talk about that one, because good night, Schultz's work is insane.
I know. It is crazy what Schultz did with it. But just the whole package, Jack Tenrack and Hannah Dundee, I mean, these are like, these aren't just like your cookie cutter hero, heroine figures, you know, laid into a story that could have been lifted out and put into the other story. He pretty well fleshed those characters out to be.
Oh, absolutely. And we are going to get back to that. I do want to touch on one final thing within the period that we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is probably the most important, most pivotal, or at least the most enduring, if not endearing, prehistoric character. And that is, of course, Devil Dinosaur.
See, I love Devil Dinosaur. And Devil Dinosaur fits into what we're talking about, because on his world was a prehistoric world.
Yes.
So it works, yeah.
Well, the thing is, he exists in the prehistory of the Marvel Universe, and it's established repeatedly because Devil Dinosaur is constantly a place, or, you know, his period of history is always a place that people wind up visiting if they're traveling that far back in time.
Right, yes.
So, like, you know, in D.C., you know, you might get time bulleted back to prehistory. You'd meet Anthro. If you went even further back, you would be embroiled in that curious prehistory of Marvel Earth, which does not subscribe to ours. And you would meet Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy.
Right.
Chaka.
Damn you, you stole my thunder. I was going to say, if you're unfamiliar, Moon Boy was the Chaka of comics.
That's why I bought Devil Dinosaur number one, because it had a devilish dinosaur on the cover. But when I saw it on the 7-Eleven spinner rack, I thought, that's Chaka. I know that's Chaka.
There's a Pakuni.
Yes. Exactly.
I know my
relationship. I was thinking, I'm buying the thing, and I'm thinking I'm going to get home, and it's going to have Sleestak, and it's going to have Holly and with her ponytails or whatever. Yeah, no, not so much.
Grumpy and Alice and Dopey.
So you know why I like
giant-ass strawberries?
So I like Devil Dinosaur because Devil Dinosaur, we run around talking about Namor being the first mutant, right? Widely recognized. I know Cole will have arguments with this, you know, but widely recognized within the popular nomenclature.
If you've listened to the show, I've reached an accord.
You've reached an accord because of his little ankle wings, which still makes him fly like he just got off of a bucking bronc, like Saint Achilles just got done riding around hell for a while. But it is not recognized that actually, if you want to talk about the first mutant in the Marvel Universe, it was Devil effing Dinosaur, y'all. He was the first
one. That is so
one.
True.
The first mutant, and it was a dinosaur. He turned red. He got smart. He had powers. Like, he was a mutant, y'all.
He had perfect teeth.
Perfect teeth, like Tom Cruise teeth in a dinosaur.
Yeah. It was like Tom Cruise had D. Snyder's teeth.
It would be like that made sense. It would be like if they took what's her name? Kirsten Dunst's teeth and put him in Vern Troyer's head.
Really?
Yeah, really. Eat
like
it.
In his mouth, sit not in a biting sense, like Vern Troyer getting bitten on the head.
Yeah. Which, but yeah, he was the first mutant. That's why I like him, and he fought Godzilla. What do you want?
Exactly. That was rather my point, is that when trying to find some way to dispense with Godzilla, S.H.I.E.L.D. actually not only shrank Godzilla, but as he got bigger, more like sort of human scale, they then took him to the Fantastic Four and used the time platform from Dr. Doom to send him back to a Devil Dinosaur. And I think that it was really one of those kind of Harry Turtledove stories where he literally butterfly affected all of Marvel prehistory.
Right.
And that's why you got House of M.
That's it. Godzilla fighting Devil Dinosaur is why you got House of M. It's why Civil War happened.
That's right. Exactly.
At the end of the day.
Most never would have occurred.
I want to see that movie.
Yeah.
It's Age of Ultron. Ultron was invented because Devil Dinosaur. Everything happened.
Very similar to the Mothman effect, which is why we got Chapstick.
I think we found a new trope for our show, which is the Devil Dinosaur effect. If there's anything that happens, it happened because of Devil Dinosaur. I think we get chaos theory. Put this drop of water on the back of my hand. That's my Jeff Goldblum. I've been working on it.
So Hammond, what have you brought me today?
You've got to get the Jeff Goldblum Jurassic Park and like intermix it, just intercut it throughout this podcast.
The whole episode. Oh, that would be brilliant if we had
time. just randomly. Preferably every time I say something funny, put it in right after that.
Is that your canned laughter? Is Jeff Goldblum laughing at Jurassic Park? I would watch Big Bang Theory if the entire laugh track was Jeff Goldblum.
Did you see someone actually uploaded a YouTube video where it's looping Jeff Goldblum's laugh for 10 hours?
No, but that's amazing. That's amazing.
I put it on to sleep to at night.
I'm using that for my Christmas virtual log next year.
So how do you? That's fantastic.
So, just having this go.
So as we come to
outside,
so as we come to a close here in our.
Oh, already?
Yeah, man. Yeah, buddy. It's...
Oh, well, hell, we got to get to our honorable mentions.
Yeah, I mean, we've still got. I start pulling us back in about 15 minutes because I know you two. So as we come to a close. What do we want to close with? Honorable mentions. I still want to hear Eddie's favorite dinosaur in comics.
Oh yeah, which comic dinosaur incarnation just blew you away?
I don't know if there's a particular dinosaur per se, but the one dinosaur comic that pissed me off the most
was Stan Lee involved?
Yeah, right. Yes. No.
Oh, damn it!
it was the Leosaurus, the Excelsiosaurus.
Right.
That's what it was. No, I've always since day one have been collecting the Jurassic Park comics and.
I know where you're going. Go ahead.
Well, you may or you may not. I don't know. But when Top started putting them out, I thought, yeah, they're pretty good. You know, they had it would start out as an adaptation. They got into like original stories. But then IDW, over the years, I started recollecting them for Colleen because she was really big into wanting to have like a full set of Jurassic Park comics. And just about that same time, IDW got the license. And so we were both like, oh my gosh, new Jurassic Park comics. This is amazing. So lo and behold, we buy the first issue and start reading it. And how does the story open? It's the guy traveling along the road to none other than Dinosaur Valley State Park.
Wow. The Paluxy River in Rose, Texas.
The very park that we visit easily 3 or 4 times a year to go day hiking. So we're like, oh my gosh, not only is this a Jurassic Park comic, but it's a Jurassic – it's like the dinosaurs being released and attacking is going to happen in Dinosaur Valley State Park. But immediately – yeah, you might as well put Stan Lee in the comic because I immediately got pissed off. So this guy, whoever this artist was, didn't even bother to look up reference photos. The drive, you would think the drive going from Dallas, it doesn't matter if you're going to Glen Rose from Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, it doesn't matter, El Paso, the drive going there. He made it look like they were on this long stretch to Area 51. I think that's it. Anybody who's been, or like I said, you can Google images of Dinosaur Valley State Park. Anybody who's been to the opening gates to the ranger station, the check-in station, it's a very unique place. It's got like a mini dinosaur museum on the inside. It's got like a nice little display on the outside. It's got a very distinct look going into it. This guy just drew like this random shack. This random shack with this...
Well, they went in through the service entrance.
Not even. And this ridiculous sign.
There's a long, long stretch of road to the service entrance.
And I was like, how dare you, sir? How dare you not even put in the time or trouble to at least get the look?
Yeah, and it's not like you can't find that stuff with ease.
Oh, my gosh, I know. I was like, IDW, hire me for the artist next time. I could have given you a Dinosaur Valley State Park that will rock the Casbah. I mean, come on.
Well, the thing about it is, like you're saying, the approach, it's rural, but not, you know, it's by no means desolate wasteland to get there.
It's like Close Encounters. It's like, where's Devil's Mountain in this thing?
Plus, you know, granted, it is in the midst of Killshed County, but... I mean, where literally every other house has a kill shed.
You could have at least put like a Buc-ee's in the background. Or
exactly.
Something.
Or the, one of those gas stations with the fried pie shoppy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the extra P in the E.
Fresh fried pies. Oh, anyway.
Honorable mention before we run out of time. Yeah. RoboCop from Marvel series issue 7, where he fights a T-Rex. Yeah.
What? Yeah. That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
You had mentioned the...
It still count.
Yes, indeed. Well, anyway. You mentioned the Jurassic Park series, and I thought you were going to talk about the Tops, where they had the cover with the Velociraptor wearing the headphones for the control headphones.
He was flying he was flying the plane. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I
remember. One of my favorite covers of the Jurassic Park.
I know. It's this Michael Golden art, and he's got, like, the headset on and everything. And people were just piss in a blue streak about that. So I thought, but no, your story was even more, because it touches on a place we've both been. And, you know, Dinosaur Valley is a huge part of my childhood. I don't want to leave here without seeing, you know, without touching on, you brought up Xenozoic Tales, a.k.a. Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
Yeah, yeah.
And holy crap, Mark Schultz brings all of these different species to bear in the Xenozoic Age. In fact, I've got multiple copies of different editions of his the portfolio you could buy. I've got the big wooden box set, and as well as the Working Man's Edition, which was considerably cheaper. But, you know, this, all these different eras of species, and you would have those, like, there's one where they, like, I don't know what it is about, you fall off a boat or off a cliff into the water, and all of a sudden you get, like, this just tapestry of prehistoric aquatic species, but the big sea scorpion came to attack. I can never remember the name of those creatures, but it was just like, oh, this is so cool. And they were, like, got a bunch of trilobites when they were trying to fish and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hannah awesome. Was complaining about, you know, there's no way we can eat these tough old things. And the dinosaur, since we brought up being pissed off, the dinosaur that pissed me off was Venomsaurus Rex. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Venomsaurus Rex.
Sideshow collectibles treatment that, like, whoever's doing their dinosauria sculpting probably got called off to do that. But I do want to give a nod to, of course, Kazar, to Turok, Son of Tarzan, any of those things where you got to go visit Pellucidar or the Savage Land, or anywhere you got to go somewhere where dinosaurs were still hanging out.
Oh, yeah. And the X-Men Savage Land stories were always my favorite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love it. Kazar had his own book, the various times he's had his own book.
Well, Sauron is by far my favorite dinosaur character in all of comics.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I think as dinosaur characters go, I mean, there's not a bunch, but it pretty much goes in order of importance. Sauron, Stegron from Spider-Man, mm-hmm. who is like the dinosaur version of the lizard, and a dinosaur from the Great Lakes Avengers.
Yes, of course, the Great Lakes Avengers will not go without being mentioned in every show that we possibly can.
Exactly.
Wait, did you say Dinosaur was part of the Great Lakes Avengers?
Dinosaur.
Dinosaur.
Not Dinosaur, no.
Oh, okay.
That's like Rip Taylorsaurus was in there as well. You just gotta really look for him. No, my favorite Sauron panel, and it's been popping up recently because it's fairly recent, was a Spider-Man comic that if you haven't seen it, I'll make sure that Cole gets the link and maybe we can post it. Is when he's having one of his villain diatribes at Spider-Man, and he's saying, you know, with the DNA I've liberated from the grave desecration, You call a museum. I have perfected the Sauronization process, because he breaks into a natural history museum and steals a bunch of dinosaur DNA. And he says, you rice paper puppets will be given form befitting Earth's dominant species, because he's going to turn everybody into dinosaurs. And the Spider-Man says, if you can rewrite DNA on the fly and you're using it to turn people into dinosaurs with that kind of tech, you could cure cancer. And he says, but I don't want to cure cancer. I want to make people into dinosaurs. Which is perfect Sauron logic right there. Just... Yeah, Sauron was always super cool.
Well, because he's more out that no one draws Sauron the way Rob Liefeld draws Sauron.
That's true.
You desecrate Sauron?
No. Sauron doesn't have feet. Like you can do a Sauron without
like that's the one character you can do well. Okay.
Right. Old tank legs.
He drew Sauron surprisingly well in the two issues of X-Force that the Brotherhood attacked X-Force.
You can leave now.
Yeah, I was actually impressed by the way he handled Sauron in those issues.
One of the best uses of Sauron was in the first two issues of Marvel Fanfare.
Okay.
Where it was just what otherwise would have been a forgotten Spider-Man X-Men mashup in the Savage Land, and it's been released in trade paperback form as Spider-Man and the X-Men in the Savage Land.
There you go. I'll pick that up.
Members mark fanfare with good reason. I also want to point out, and of course, you know, Stegron. I'd almost forgotten him. It's like the lizard, only he's a dinosaur, and he and the lizard got together and fought Spider-Man. But I want to talk about a publication from trying to remember who put this out, because I think an abridged version of it was available as a free Comic Book Day comic years and years and ages ago. But there's a wonderful comic titled Bone Sharps, Cowboys, and Thunder Lizards.
Nice.
And basically what it is like an illustrated, probably dramatized history of the rivalry.
Nice.
Between amateur pretty much the fathers of modern paleontology, Edward Drinker Cope and Othniel Marsh.
The Cope-Marsh rivalry. Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah.
And it includes all kinds of prominent figures like P.T. Barnum and Ulysses S. Grant. And, you know, it just weaves all this history through the dino bone rush that occurred during that period in history. And it's kind of a good place to draw everything to a close, because this is a contemporary dinosaur story, you know, with people in it. But it's about the age when the dinosaur was really, I mean, relatively speaking, the dinosaur is a fairly recent addition to the scientific vernacular.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what
makes it.
God damn it. I think that's what piques our curiosity and why we keep going back to that well, because unlike the future, you know, which we will get into, the future is all imagined, right? You can do anything with the future, but that kind of vast canvas can sometimes lead to not only tropes, but to stymieing writers and artists. Whereas if you fall back on a dinosaur trope, you know what you're doing and you can extrapolate on that and write either some really painted into corner stories or really brilliant stories around that time period.
So when you do your episode, your issue where you talk about the future, to bring it back to the beginning, y'all have to mention Technophage from Techno Comics, Neil Gaiman, because it about the evil dinosaur, what's his name? Oh, crap, what's his name, that character? Henry Phage.
Nice.
I think.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, he's the intelligent evil dinosaur creature that pretty much rules the future in this world, and evil nice. Talking dinosaur. Oh,
we have got to do a dino episode. And also, you bringing that up reminded me in Top Ten.
Yes, yes.
Amazing miniseries when Peacock King is sent to Grand Central and winds up in the arena.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
yes,
has
yes,
to
yes,
fight yes. A robotic velociraptor known as Technozoic.
Hey, when we do that full whole dinosaur episode, I want to title it Full Bronte. We're going to go
for it. Oh, I'm so writing that down. I was trying to come up with some kind of anagram for DNA, like dino DNA, like dinos don't.
Oh, we're going to go full Bronte.
I like that. I like that. Oh, crap. Okay, you asked me my favorite dinosaur character. I can't believe this is an obvious one. My favorite dinosaur character, the Triceratons from Ninja Turtles. Boom.
Oh,
okay.
Nice.
I'm done.
Yeah, okay. You're out. You're
I'm
out.
I'm done.
Dropping the mic. All right, so we got to wrap it up, but I do want you guys to briefly as you can touch back on your guys' weekend and what it means for the JCU and where you guys are going next on your Rantcore tour. Now, I'm telling you this, to keep it truncated. I know you guys are going to talk about it on Rantcore, but get wet their whistle a little bit.
Oh, where do we start? Because it was such a freaking amazing weekend. I mean, like nothing we've experienced before. Where, first off, the first day on that Friday, what was really surreal, there's been times, and it's always surreal when we meet listeners of the show.
Oh, yes.
But to meet listeners of the show who are like longtime listeners of the show, we've never met them through social media or anywhere else, and then suddenly the guys over there quoting or referencing things like are literally.
Tell the story about when you were out on the either the vendor floor or the artist alley, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'll get to that one in a second. So it's like this guy is like quoting episodes that from before there was a live show. Like it changed when we had the live show because our audience expanded, but. To meet someone who's been following us since pre-live show and to the point where he was so excited that he came and found me on the last day of the weekend and gave me a hug because he said, thank you for all the cool moments and all the laughs that y'all give me from the show. I was like, that's awesome. Cool.
That is awesome.
But another awesome moment was I'm walking up one of the aisles and I hear in the next aisle over these guys they're carrying on and laughing and the guy says Rancor Pit And then I'm like, okay, I'm zeroing in on their conversation, and they're going on and on about what we talked about on one of the decades episodes about something.
Yeah, that had been airing just this in the throughout right. the month of May.
Yeah,
the and last one went live on the 31st.
They're referencing some of our jokes, and then one of them starts bringing up prior hashtags, and then the other guy's bringing up prior hashtags. And I'm thinking, this is insane to like listen to people talk about your show, and they have no idea you're in the next aisle listening to them talking about
that. Is amazing, and we're gonna have to so mention that on the show, and I hope we don't make anyone self-conscious with that. But I think that's hilarious that the hashtag, because that we literally need someone to go through and chronicle exactly how many hashtags and what all they.
Oh, I'm doing it for our year four anniversary episode.
It's like a show. I mean, it would take a year to do it, but I want to go back.
I've actually already started making notes.
And try to make some notes on Hey Kids Comics about like all of the Ultron Cafe
albums, all the members of Muggerville 7. Like it's impossible.
Yeah, all of the various names that Andy has either danced, sung, or otherwise performed under. and also chronicle. I would love to just like get an audio capture of every time that Eddie has been on the show. And I've made him think that some apocryphal BS.
Oh, God, it's so funny.
Was oh, my real. Gosh.
It's so funny. It's so funny. But yeah, you guys killed it this weekend. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, Famous Monsters Convention had arrived in Dallas this last weekend. And what started out as a panel submission soon grew to up to six or five different panels plus a game show. That then our contact at Famous Monsters had to whittle us back to three because they had so much content.
Oh, yeah.
And not a lot of places to put it. So, you know, I understand that. That's the way it goes. And one of the things that was fun is Eddie and I, you know, we had the Galactic Games, five. So that's a very Star Wars-centric thing. We had our official roadshow panel, which we were – it was actually suggested by Jen from Famous Monsters that they had the Mandalorian Mercs and they had the R2 builders, the Astromech builders there. Maybe they might – you know, we might like to have them on as guests. I thought, well, we're going to do a thing called Do It Yourself. And then Eddie had mentioned, well, you know, it's the 40th anniversary. I'm like, oh, crap. Let's do two panels. We'll do another roadshow panel called the Big 4-0. And we wound up – that was one of the ones that was whittled because we had – a Star Wars panel. We had a Star Wars game show. We were at Famous Frickin' Monsters, based on the Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine by the incredible Forrest J. Ackerman. What else can you do? But I came up with the title of Favorite Monsters of Filmland, and Eddie was just like all over this. We had a blast talking about what I presented as horror, that, you know, our favorite horror movies and horror characters from a time when horror was monsters, not murders.
Right.
And we had a wonderfully engaging audience. We had some great interaction. We had a woman who's far too young to be this knowledgeable. She was like Eddie on comic book things, you know. She was like all over just old stuff that we were vaguely familiar with or familiar enough with.
She was the foremost expert on the Tingler, and yeah. She was probably 22, 21 years old. It was insane. She was reminding me of things about the Tingler and the backstory that I had forgotten years ago, and I thought, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about that. She was just like, well, it's all in audio. The podcast will be out soon, so it's amazing stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, look for that on Jedi Cult Universe as the Rancor Pit, some of the roadshow coverage that will be posting here very shortly, because Eddie has just been putting like every spare moment of every day into getting the live show up on YouTube, on you know, cutting the odd shows, and just been dynamite. And by the way, that's William Castle, director, his film The Tingler. That was not another Urban Dictionary reference.
I mean, it was. But you don't. We don't have.
But in 1959.
It's funny that you say that, because when I was telling the story to Colleen, she's like, and I said, yeah, and I'd barely mentioned the Tingler, and this girl in the front row just got all excited, like it was obvious she wanted to talk about it. And she was like, "Are you sure?"
Wonder
that it was the what's his name? Vincent Price Tingler and not something else? I was like, I didn't think of that.
So what's,
well, luckily she hopped right in and knew exactly what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So what's next for you guys? Like, what, you got the road show, so what, so give me a litany of what's going on.
What's okay, amazing
comes,
is we're
everybody get your pen and paper ready. Here it comes, fast
real
and
quick,
furious.
I just have to point out that when we recorded the latest episode of the Rancor Pit, the recorded show, which was our final chapter of Decades, and Eddie and I were remarking, we only have two appearances down out of seven.
Oh yeah,
that it still is amazing.
Oh yeah, it's already been like so many cool experiences, and that's just two out of seven that we've done. Okay, here it comes June 10th. Actually, June 10th and 11th. I had it wrong on the T-shirt. June 10th and 11th, the DFW G.I. Joe and Action Figure Show in Grapevine at the Grapevine Convention Center. June 24th, Geek Out in Burleson. We're going to go live at noon. July 8th, Galaxy Call Dallas in, is that Richardson, I believe?
Garland.
Garland, that's right. You're right. In Garland. We're going to go live at noon. July 15th, we'll be at Arlington in Arlington.
That's right. At the
And, of course, to cap it all off, the big three-day weekend, August 11th through the 13th, Infinicon 2017.
There you go. So we've got to get out of here, guys. We are out of time, almost out of all tape. Right. So do you guys have any final thoughts on prehistoric comic books?
I'm gonna go find copies of Anthro or whatever.
There you go.
Called.
What's called? Anthro.
Is it Anthro?
Yeah.
Anthro. Okay, DC's.
That's Andro.
It's like the tale of young Cro-Magnon in a world ruled by Neanderthal.
Yes. Cro-Magnon's Jughead.
Cro-Magnon's Jughead.
Jurassic Jughead. And I will say, seek out Dinosaur Comics in all of their forms, but especially check out Age of Reptiles. It is just stunningly gorgeous. It's like the William Stout. You know, Ricardo Delgado is like William Stout of comics. And if you're unfamiliar with William Stout, look for William Stout's Dinosaurs, which is amazing in its own right. He's the most brilliant paleo artist out there. And, you know, just in general, get Paleolithic on your ass.
That's right. Now, what are we coming back with? Go ahead. I'm sorry, Eddie. What?
I was going to say, I've already put Age of Reptiles on my Amazon wish list. It's already on there.
What's next week?
Finally, yes, next week for our 131st issue, Drawing Like an Egyptian.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be Carter Hall, more Vandal Savage, lot of Dr.
Like
Fate
all
talk.
All holes filled with Egypt.
It's just all holes filled with emptying those holes with weird things like your brain in an optic jar before we bury you entombed with all of your worldly possessions and possibly your slaves. So yeah, with all that being said,
we're gonna be so Ozymandias.
I'm not gonna say buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. Cole covered that. So why doesn't everybody say goodnight and we'll get out of here and let people go listen to the Rancor Pit.
Good night from the present, everybody.
And good night from the past. He's been dead for 30 years.